On one hand, I've talked about the superiority of humans, and on the other, I appear to be suggesting that we have much to learn from wild animals. That's exactly what I'm saying, but there's no contradiction. Our intellect has enabled us to establish superiority over other animals. Intelligence is a wonderful thing, but it can go to your head. Nature has provided us with a bounty of privileges and opportunities. Is there anything wrong with using our intelligence to improve things even further? Not if we really are improving them. Look again at the so-called advances we've made, including in our eating habits, and it shows we've gone against nature's guide. Where has our intelligence got us? We use the word animalistic to describe human behaviour that we believe to be inhuman. Mindless violence, vandalism, wanton destruction. And yet this sort of behaviour is exclusively human. In fact, we've applied some of the finest minds in history to the quest for destruction, resulting in bombs that could destroy the entire planet. The atomic bomb was supposed to be the ultimate deterrent to spell the end of war forever, and yet it failed to prevent the carnage in Vietnam or the Balkans, Iraq, Afghanistan, or any of the other numerous conflicts that have broken out since World War II ended. The idea of destroying the planet with bombs is abhorrent to all of us, and yet we've inflicted untold damage through other means in the name of progress. The pollution and destruction of our natural environment through deforestation, overmining, overfarming, overfishing, and urbanization. We have made spectacular breakthroughs in medicine, but many of the diseases we treat are the result of ignoring our instinct and thereby nature. Is this progress? The wrong foods. I suffered from constipation for years. I accepted it as an annoying but common fact of life. Each time I went to my doctor, he would prescribe me some medicine, and within a few days the constipation would go, but it kept coming back. It never crossed my mind to try to find out why I was getting constipated in the first place. The human body clearly isn't designed to suffer recurring constipation. Why didn't it occur to me that I was eating the wrong foods? Why didn't my doctor tell me? We've come to accept all manner of ailments as a normal part of life. Indigestion, heartburn, constipation, diarrhea, headaches, kidney stones, type 2 diabetes, gout, nausea. We take our medicine, and if we're lucky, the symptoms disappear. Rather than simply treating symptoms, we should look for the root cause. If we have a flat tire, we don't just pump it up and wait for it to go flat again. We do everything possible to find the cause of the puncture and repair it. If the oil warning light on your car's dashboard comes on, what do? Remove the bulb? Of course not. You top up the oil. All the symptoms I've mentioned are warning lights, indications that something is wrong, and to solve the problem, we need to address the cause. Our symptoms are part of nature's guide. Treat them with a magic pill that prevents your brain from registering them, and you're removing the guide. Some symptoms, such as vomiting or coughing, are also part of the cure, nature's method of ejecting poisons from the stomach or lungs. Take a pill to remove those symptoms, and you're actively hindering the cure. Many of the medicines that doctors prescribe actually make matters worse. Painkillers have side effects which cause serious problems. Drugs are poisons administered in controlled doses. The body reacts to the poison, building an immunity to it. As a result, stronger and stronger doses of the drug are required to mask the pain until it no longer works. The original problem has not been eradicated. The patient is again in pain, and now they're also addicted to painkillers. Blinded by science. Science made incredible breakthroughs in the last century. Now we can transplant a human heart and grow a human ear on a mouse. Yet we die in vast numbers from awful diseases such as cancer, AIDS, and Alzheimer's. Our blind faith in modern medicine is reminiscent of Lenny in John Steinbeck's classic American novel Of Mice and Men, who was so grateful to his companion George for saving him from drowning that he forgot it was George who had pushed him into the water in the first place. Nature has provided us with the most effective protection from disease on Earth, our immune system. Taking drugs destroys it. By allowing our intelligence to act against nature, we've put evolution into reverse. Wild animals don't suffer from the huge variety of diseases that we do because they follow nature's guide. The flaw in the machine. The human being is an incredible machine, infinitely more complex than the car, and yet there is a flaw that has caused us untold misery. The essential difference between us and wild animals is that they lead their lives instinctively. We have instincts too, but our intelligence gets in the way. This facility to learn, develop ideas, and communicate has set us apart from the rest of the animal kingdom. It has also given us the impression that we are in control of our own destiny. In fact, our instinct and our intellect are often at odds. This is the flaw in the human machine. As instinct is an uncalculated response, we don't really understand or trust it. When our instinct and intellect are in conflict, we find it easier to make a decision based on reasoned argument. Because we don't understand our instincts, we think it's guesswork. But instinct is not hit and miss. It's the result of 3 billion years of trial and error. It's what enables wild animals to distinguish between food and poison. Wild animals don't need doctors or hospitals to give birth. Nature is their guide. I explained that since man designed the car, he is the expert on how to maintain it in the best possible condition. It's clear that nature, not man, is the leading authority on our bodies. So if your body develops a fault, the logical source to turn to for the solution is nature's guide. Instinct. You're now ready for the fourth instruction. If someone gives you advice that contradicts the advice of nature, regardless of how eminent or qualified that person may be, ignore it. Food or poison? Wild animals are much more selective than we are about the food they eat. And they don't suffer from constipation, diarrhea, heartburn, indigestion, stomach ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, nor diseases of the stomach, bowel, kidneys, or liver, nor from any of the other degenerative diseases common to humans. The obvious conclusion is that these conditions are the direct result of our eating habits. Just as a car manufacturer knows best about the fuel and maintenance that a particular car requires, so nature knows better than we do the best way to eat. We will concentrate on understanding nature's guide and learning to enjoy following it, so that like wild animals, you will be your ideal weight naturally and effortlessly. Summary. Your body is infinitely more complex than any machine. Man designed the car, he didn't design himself. The real expert on how your body works is nature. Trusting intelligence over instinct has brought us misery. Ignore any advice that goes against nature. Top tip number 4. Nature's guide. Humans ate well and stayed healthy for millions of years without the help of nutritionists or dietitians. So-called experts in the modern world have produced countless guidelines and rules designed to counteract the effects of junk. If they contradict the real expert, nature, ignore them. Learn to follow the instincts of your mind and body and live as nature intended. Chapter 5. Your ideal weight. In this chapter, a preconceived target weight. Seeing is believing. Your problem is solved the moment you understand the method. The 5th and 6th instructions. How do you know what your ideal weight is? You may well have a specific weight in mind. There's no shortage of weight charts that will tell you. All you need is your height and sex. If you've decided on a target weight this way, please forget it. You have mistakenly put your faith in a guesstimate made by man. Instead, refer to nature's guide. Alan Carr's Easy Weigh Clinics. At our weight clinics, it's always interesting when we ask the group to guess the weight of the fastest man on Earth. Currently, Usain Bolt, the phenomenal Jamaican sprinter. The guesses vary by as much as 3 stone. If you're expecting me to tell you the actual weight of Usain Bolt, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I have no idea how much he weighs. I have no need to know. It's glaringly obvious that he's in superb physical condition. If you were in a similar physical condition, do you think you'd care how much you weighed? The fact that these guesses vary by 3 stone indicates how random setting yourself a target weight is. It shows that we actually have no idea about the correlation between what the scales tell us and what we see when we look in the mirror. Look at your friends. Do you need a set of scales to decide which of them are overweight and which are not? Of course you don't. Did you come to the conclusion that you're overweight by jumping on the scales? Or was it the sight of your reflection in the mirror? Or the fact that your clothes started to feel too tight? Or that you felt short of energy and the slightest exertion left you out of breath? Uncharted territory. The simple equation used by weight charts can only give a ballpark figure of your ideal weight. Although there is clearly a relationship between height and weight, it's far from exact. With my method, you're not going to starve yourself to reach a figure thrown out by a calculator. You're going to achieve your ideal weight by eating your way to health. Your scales won't tell you when you're the exact weight you want to be. Your eyes and your lungs will. If you start out with a preconceived target weight, you're letting the tail wag the dog and creating unnecessary difficulties for yourself. I accept that any weight loss method would be frustrating if you never knew when you'd succeeded. I expect you want me to tell you for certain the exact weight you should be. I'm delighted to tell you I can. Your ideal weight is the weight you happen to be when you can look at yourself naked in a full-length mirror and be happy with your shape. It's the weight you are when you wake up bursting with energy and looking forward to each new day with confidence and joy. It's not a weight decided by trendy magazines, and it has nothing to do with equations or guesswork. Alan Carr's Easy Way works according to the simple principles of nature. Your fifth instruction is also very simple. Don't start off with a preconceived target weight. Ponder that last paragraph again, admiring your reflection in the mirror, waking up full of energy, feeling confident and excited about the new day. Anyone of any age can enjoy feeling that way about themselves. There may be things about your looks you wish were different, a different nose perhaps, or bigger eyes. I can't do anything about that. But I can promise that you'll radiate health, confidence, and happiness, and those are the most attractive features in any person. You don't need weighing scales to tell you when you've reached your ideal weight. However, please don't assume from this that you should throw your scales away. They'll prove useful. When I found, after following my method, that I could enjoy a 5-mile run at the end of a long day at work and feel really great afterwards, I could hardly believe that previously I couldn't climb a flight of stairs without getting out of breath. When I looked back and realized how much weight I'd lost, it was easy to believe. Keeping a regular record of your weight is not the same as setting yourself a target weight. Don't be a slave to the scales, but use them, say, once a week to monitor your weight and celebrate as the pounds fall off. The changes that occur in our appearance are usually gradual. If you look at a photograph of yourself 10 years ago, you might be surprised at how different you looked. The same is true of weight gain. The change in shape is imperceptible from one day to the next, so we hardly notice our slide into obesity. We become conditioned to accept it and don't see it as the disease it is. If the extra bulk appeared overnight, we'd be shocked. My method would enable you to achieve dramatic improvements in appearance, fitness, and health, but it's not one of those diets that claims to work overnight. Anything that puts your body through such a rapid transformation is extremely unpleasant, unhealthy, and unsustainable. Alan Carr's easy way is enjoyable right from the start. The sixth instruction is, do not diet. There's another great advantage to not setting yourself a target weight. If you do, you won't feel you've solved your problem until you've hit your target. In the meantime, you'll be waiting for the moment of fulfillment. The belt test. It's great when you find that your clothes no longer fit, not because they're too tight, but because they're too loose. A belt becomes a marvelous accessory in these circumstances. Whoever designed the belt couldn't have foreseen how their invention would become my best friend. When I first started losing weight, I had to use the second hole from the end. The belt had 9 holes. As I lost weight, I found I had to make new holes to keep my trousers from falling down. Each hole I made gave me a tremendous high. As you follow my method, these encouragements are a constant source of joy. After a farmer sows his seeds, he goes home at the end of the day, content that he's done what he needs to ensure a healthy crop. He doesn't have to wait until harvest time to feel satisfied. With my method, you don't have to wait either. You can start enjoying life immediately, content in the knowledge that simply by following my method, you've already solved your weight problem. The wheels are already in motion. You're not going on a diet. You're simply changing your way of eating because you want to. And that change starts from day one. Summary. Don't begin with a preconceived target weight. You'll know when you're the weight you want to be. The process is easy, painless, and actually enjoyable. The sense of achievement starts from day one. Top tip number 5. Your ideal weight. Think in terms of your shape, not your weight. Your shape, and whether you're happy with it, is the most reliable indicator of your progress and condition. Chapter 6. Fueling up and burning off. In this chapter, intake and disposal. Why we put on weight. Exercising to lose weight. Why we eat. Comfort eating. The balancing act. When it comes to refueling, why do we treat our bodies so differently to our cars? By realizing that it's counterproductive to set yourself a target weight, you've already made huge progress. All we have to look at now is intake and disposal. And fortunately, these are also easy to deal with. Intake is the quantity and type of food you consume. Disposal is the process of burning energy and disposing of waste matter. Whenever I mention food, please assume I mean food and drink. And whenever I mention eating, assume I mean eating and drinking, unless I make a clear distinction. Let's begin by asking why we put on weight. I've no doubt you've asked yourself this many times. The answer is simple. The body will gain weight when our intake exceeds our disposal. Perhaps you've convinced yourself that there are other reasons why you weigh more than you want. I've heard them all. Glandular problems, a slow metabolism, a lack of exercise, age. If you focus on these, you'll be led astray. I remind you of the importance of having an open mind. Nothing grows without being fed. Even if for any reason you don't need to eat as much as the next person, that doesn't mean you have to deprive yourself of the food you want, and they don't. Is it a problem if your neighbor's car consumes more fuel per mile than yours? Of course not. You don't need to worry about the rate at which your body burns energy. If you follow nature's guide and ignore any conflicting advice, you'll be able to eat as much as you want and still be your correct weight, regardless of your glands, metabolic rate, how much you exercise, or your age. Athletes, dancers, and others who make a career out of vigorous exercise certainly look as if weight is not a problem for them. But just because they seem to control their weight, That doesn't mean they don't have weight problems. The boxer, Ricky Hatton, is renowned for his overeating. His job demands that he reaches a target weight, but between fights, he hits the junk food, piles on the pounds, and then embarks on a strict regime to get him back to his target weight in time for the next fight. Hatton is very open about this, and there are plenty of others in his profession who have exactly the same problem. Special exercise is not essential to weight loss. When you exercise, you burn off more fuel, which increases your disposal rate. But exercise also makes you hungrier, so you increase your intake. Running man. I knew a man who decided to run the London Marathon. He felt the exercise would help him to shed some weight, as well as giving him a sense of achievement. When he began training a year before the run, he weighed 14 stone. He got up at 6 every morning so he could run for an hour before work. 12 months later, he ran the London Marathon and completed the course in just over 4 hours. He was thrilled with his achievement, but weighed exactly the same as he had a year ago. For every calorie he had burned off pounding the roads, he had eaten and drunk more than ever before to satisfy his increased hunger. Furthermore, muscle weighs more than fat, so although he was fitter, trimmer, stronger and healthier, he did not lose weight. As I'll explain later, physical exercise plays an important part in the attainment of overall well-being, but in itself, it does not necessarily help you lose weight. If a slim figure were dependent on vigorous exercise, wouldn't many wild animals be tremendously fat? Lions spend around 20 hours a day asleep. Wild animals don't have to spend their lives charging about to keep in shape. They simply balance their intake with their disposal. Filling up. Do you know the weight of the average car? I certainly don't. I've never felt the need to find out. All I know is that when I top it up with fuel, the weight increases, and as I drive around and burn fuel, the weight drops. I don't pay it any attention. Would you take your car for a drive to burn off fuel in order to decrease its weight? That would be idiotic. And it's the same as putting ourselves through special exercise in order to burn calories to lose weight. You might see a flaw in this comparison. When your car runs out of fuel, it stops running. When your body runs out of fuel, it starts to draw on fat reserves. And isn't that exactly what we want? The trouble with this theory is that after exercise, you'll be hungry and thirsty, and the natural tendency is to eat to replace the energy you've expended. If you try to resist that urge, it will take willpower, and you'll feel deprived and miserable. All you're doing is dieting, and diets don't work. I may have given the impression that I'm not in favour of exercise. This couldn't be further from the truth. Man was designed to be active. We were originally obliged to go in search of food and escape predators. Our bodies were not supposed to be slouched in front of a screen all day, and they function best when we're physically active. Getting our circulation and breathing going not only makes us feel good, it also makes every function in our body operate more efficiently, including digestion. I love exercise because it helps to keep me fit, toned, healthy, and happy. Unlike the car, man didn't design the human body. And in our efforts to master our understanding of how it works, we've created a fog of confusing misinformation. It's time to simplify and clarify the situation by going back to nature's guide. Fact box. Today, more people in the world are suffering from obesity than from starvation. Why, when, and what do we eat? When you sit down to eat, do you think to yourself, I must eat this food to prevent myself from starving to death? How many of us actually know what starvation feels like? I was once seriously concerned that I might die through lack of water, but I don't think a day has gone by when I haven't been fortunate enough to have something to eat. Although avoiding starvation is the ultimate purpose of eating, isn't it true that each meal is prompted by a more immediate reason, such as, I'm in the habit of eating 3 meals a day, I enjoy eating, or because I got a whiff of something that smelled good, or simply, the food was there, so I ate it. Boredom and restlessness are other reasons commonly put forward for eating. They are also common reasons given for smoking. You want some relief, so you reach for the biscuits, crisps, chocolate bar, or a cigarette. But snacking or smoking doesn't relieve boredom or restlessness. Comfort eating. Boredom and restlessness are usually caused by a problem, be it a piece of work that's proving difficult or a coming event about which we're feeling insecure. Whatever the problem, it's not hunger. Yet we often reach for a snack in order to comfort ourselves. How did we come to believe that a problem that has nothing to do with hunger can be solved by eating? Because that's exactly how snacks have been sold to us by marketing experts. Need to make the kids happy? Give them some sweets. Does this really make them happy? Watching a tense drama, a film, or a football match? Eat some crisps or popcorn. Does it really improve the experience? Want to impress your girlfriends? Give them some Belgian chocolate. Does this make them love you more? If we think we can alleviate boredom and nervousness by eating, why don't we think we could do the same by quenching our thirst? Most of us eat according to a set routine. 3 meals a day, morning, noon, and evening. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's eminently sensible. But if we eat the same amount, regardless of how much energy we've expended, isn't that the same as putting 50 litres of fuel in your car every week, regardless of how much driving you've done? If you don't use the car 1 week, do you still put your usual amount in the tank? There would be fuel spilling out all over the forecourt if you did. In nature, hunger is the sign that tells us when we need fuel. This is exactly how wild animals eat. The squirrel knew when to stop eating nuts, as it was no longer hungry. We are designed to work in the same way. Yet we've become so confused that we let the tail wag the dog. We pump in fuel even when our tank is already full. If we overfill our car, the fuel splashes onto the forecourt. Imagine if it flowed out of the tank and into the engine and boot. That's exactly what happens with our bodies. For reasons I'll explain later, the human body doesn't offload all the excess fuel we pump into it. The junk sloshes into our midriff, buttocks, waist, chest, arms, legs, neck, and face, and stays there in unsightly bulges. All you have to do is apply the same approach to eating as you do to fueling your car. That's what wild animals do. They don't worry about their weight or how they dispose of the food once they've digested it. All they do is supply their bodies with appropriate quantities of their favourite foods. Overeating is caused by eating the wrong foods, i.e. incorrect intake, and this is what lies at the root of your weight problem. It should now be clear that efficiently disposing of what you eat and reaching your ideal weight will happen automatically when you're eating according to nature's guide. Most importantly, if you follow my method, you'll find the whole process easy and immensely enjoyable. Summary. We gain weight when our intake exceeds our disposal. Exercising to burn calories is like driving to burn petrol. Weight and disposal will take care of themselves if intake is correct. Top tip number 6. Take a stroll. Cars are supposed to make our lives easier, giving us greater freedom and convenience. It's hard to believe when you're sitting in a queue for the supermarket car park or driving round and round looking for a parking space. If the supermarket's within walking distance, try leaving your car at home and going on foot, or try shopping little and often at local farmers' markets and grocery stores. It's far more relaxing. Chapter 7. What's on the menu? In this chapter, what happens when we put in the wrong fuel? The natural choice. The joy of eating. Putting diesel in a Ferrari. We need to understand the effects of eating certain types of food. You may be thinking, all you're saying, Alan, is that I eat too much of the wrong foods. I could have told you that. That may be the case, but at this stage I'm making no assumptions about the quantity or type of food you eat. I'm simply clarifying that you might well have been confused by having a preconceived idea of what weight you should be aiming for, or by thinking that if you were to exercise more, your problem would be solved. It's important that you erase both these misconceptions from your mind and understand that intake is the critical factor. It's also important that you're clear about the effect that incorrect intake has on your body. Don't worry, I'm not going to try and frighten you with gory details about the damage that processed foods do to your insides, and how eating too much of the wrong foods can cause heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer, and obesity, not to mention heartburn, constipation, diarrhea, stiff joints, tooth decay, and bad skin. Perhaps you fear this is the point where I say you have to give up all your favorite foods. Don't panic. Remember, with my method, you can eat as much of your favorite foods as you want, whenever you want, as often as you want, and be the exact weight you want to be without dieting, special exercise, using willpower, or feeling deprived. But you're right about one thing. This is the moment of truth. Now we're dealing with intake, we've reached the point that will determine whether you succeed. If that sounds daunting, remember, easy way is easy and enjoyable. You've nothing to fear. You're not going to be deprived of anything. On the contrary, you'll soon be feeling the elation of having solved your weight problem. In the last chapter, I talked about adjusting the amount of fuel you put in your car according to the amount the car is used. Now we're going to look at the type of fuel you choose. You obviously know whether your car runs on petrol or diesel. I certainly hope so, otherwise the consequences would be disastrous. You don't need to understand anything about the working principles of the internal combustion engine to be aware that you shouldn't put diesel in a petrol engine or vice versa. As cars have become more sophisticated, they've become more particular about the type of fuel they consume. The manufacturer tells us what to use, and we follow the instructions. The animal kingdom has evolved on similarly sophisticated lines. Every creature on the planet has its own specific intake requirements and the physical attributes to thrive on that intake. Why has nature made things so complicated by having a specific ideal intake for each species? If every species were designed to eat the same foods, the biggest and strongest amongst them would thrive and the smallest and weakest would die. That, in turn, would condemn the biggest and strongest to extinction, as they depend on the smallest and weakest to survive. The largest creature on the planet, the blue whale, feeds on one of the smallest, plankton. And without the birds, bees, and other flying insects which pollinate plants, our entire ecosystem would collapse. Nature's ingenuity means each species has the physical attributes to obtain and enjoy its favorite food. Think about the legs and neck of the giraffe, the trunk of the elephant, the snout of the anteater, the teeth and claws of the lion. Just as all creatures have the physical tools to obtain their food, they also have the internal organs to digest it. For example, the cow has four stomachs. These developments have not happened overnight. They've evolved over millions of years. No species can evolve fast enough to cope with the changes made by man, not even man himself. That's not a flaw in nature's plan. It's the consequence of mankind thinking he knows better. Growing old painfully. The baby boom generation was supposed to have been the most blessed in history. As teenagers in the 60s, they experienced new freedoms, worldwide travel, major developments in technology and medicine, and a revolution in the supply and preparation of food. While man seemed to be making such rapid progress, the supermarket shelves were taking his intake even further away from what nature intended. Today, we learn that the baby boomers are more susceptible than previous generations to health problems, such as aching joints, asthma, diabetes, strokes, and obesity. No matter how the car engine evolves, it will always be necessary to feed it the correct fuel. In fact, the more sophisticated it becomes, the more specific that fuel has to be. The same applies to your digestive system. Though we may be evolving all the time and living longer, we still need to feed our digestive system the fuel intended for it. It's ironic that most people treat their cars with the utmost respect and yet regularly fill their bodies with rubbish. Put diesel in a petrol engine and it'll stop working immediately, yet we can eat all sorts of rubbish and keep going. Everyone knows of a child who has swallowed a plastic toy or a coin without any apparent damage. Some entertainers eat broken glass. One man even ate an entire aeroplane. The human body is a truly incredible machine that can withstand an enormous amount of abuse and continue to function. But don't be misled into thinking this means you can consume anything you like without doing yourself damage. Eating the wrong type of food may not stop us in our tracks, as diesel will stop a petrol car, but it does have disastrous consequences. If we don't eat the food that nature has designed for us, we become fat, slow, and lethargic until we finally grind to a halt. The petrol engine contaminated with diesel has to be flushed through at great expense to work again. Your body pushes anything it's not designed to digest into out-of-the-way places. These toxins gather as unsightly fat deposits, clogging up your bloodstream and suffocating your entire body. The natural choice. Animals don't have these problems because they eat only natural foods. By that I mean food that is eaten in its natural state, not refined, frozen, pickled, preserved, smoked, sweetened, flavored, fermented, mixed, added to, or cooked. Maybe alarm bells are ringing. Are you telling me I'm no longer allowed to cook? No, I'm saying nothing of the sort. Remember, with my method, there are no restrictions. Earlier, I emphasized the importance of an open mind, so discard your preconceptions and think about the foods that would be available to you if you followed the example of wild animals. I'm talking about foods that require no cooking or processing, yet taste wonderful, without any need for flavorings, seasoning, or sauces. Do you agree that it comes down to fruit, vegetables, nuts, and seeds? Apart from these, even the most basic of everyday foods has been tampered with. When you come home and you fancy a quick snack, you might opt for a jam sandwich. It seems natural enough. But let's look closely at the man-made process and ingredients. Starting with the bread, a mixture of milled and refined flour, yeast, salt, and numerous additives, baked at high temperature. Now the butter, cow's milk pasteurized, homogenized, churned, and refrigerated to prevent it from decomposing. The jam is made by boiling the life out of fruit and adding refined sugar and preservatives. You might argue that all this tampering is for the better, improving the foods in question. But does it really improve them? Or does it simply kill any natural goodness or nutritional value the ingredients had to begin with? Cooking food destroys vital vitamins, antioxidants, and essential fatty acids. However, you can carry on cooking delicious meals, and you don't have to restrict yourself to fresh fruit, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. My method restores the joy of eating and makes it easy for you to attain your ideal weight. If you were happy eating just fresh fruit, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, you would enjoy a very healthy and energetic life, free from weight problems. But nature's ingenious design has a built-in margin for error, which means we can eat a certain amount of second-rate foods without causing problems. I'll explain more about this junk margin later. For now, I want you to be reassured that my method is not about forbidding certain foods. This margin for error is different for all species. The koala bear is limited exclusively to eucalyptus leaves, whereas the goat can survive on almost anything. However, no other species on the planet can match the variety of food eaten by man. Because of our intellect, we've ended up eating a uniquely varied and processed selection of foods. Not only are we able to eat meat, vegetables, fruit, and fish, we even tend to combine this variety of foods within the same meal, even in the same mouthful. Indeed, many people feel that unless they have their meat and two veg at each meal, they've been shortchanged. Our stomachs try to cope with this wide range of foods, but the very fact that you're reading this book tells us that it's not a recipe for slimness, health, or happiness. You can't just put any old food in your mouth and expect your digestive system to get on with it. What if your car ran out of petrol miles from the nearest garage, and I told you, "Don't worry, your car runs on petrol, which is made from crude oil. There's a plastic bag in your boot. Plastic also happens to be made from crude oil. We can stuff it into the petrol tank. That should do the trick." It's clearly a ridiculous suggestion, and you'd probably wonder if I'd gone mad. But we and so-called expert nutritionists apply the same illogical principle to our bodies. I call it the plastic bag syndrome, and we're going to explore it in the next chapter. Summary. Understand the effects of eating the wrong foods. All animals are designed to eat foods specific to them. I'm not imposing restrictions. There's also a junk margin. Top tip number 7. Start with a salad. Natural foods make you feel best. Make sure you have some raw, natural, unprocessed food at every meal. Start lunch and dinner with a salad. Mix as many raw vegetables as you want. Cover your plate in colour. Red tomatoes, green lettuce and yellow peppers. Great raw carrot and beetroot. Good quality extra virgin olive oil and lemon juice will dress your food perfectly. Chapter 8. The Plastic Bag Syndrome. In this chapter, where do we get our nutrients? The consequences of eating junk. The digestive process. There's no substitute for quality. If we eat meat for protein, why not eat teeth for calcium? The fact that something contains nutrients we need doesn't necessarily make that food suitable for us to eat. Put something other than the recommended fuel in your car's tank and you could cause serious damage to the engine, but you can always replace your car. You only get one body. You'd think that would make us look after our bodies infinitely more carefully than we look after our cars. Yet the reality is that we treat them more like a waste disposal unit. Perhaps you believe this is one of the many advantages of being a human being. After all, the giant panda and the koala bear are under threat because they eat only one plant. I have news for you. Mankind as a whole may not be under immediate threat of extinction, but each individual consuming this incredible variety of food invites obesity, disease, and premature death. We're not very discriminating about food. So long as something is edible and not classed as a poison, we regard it as food. We eat it without a second thought as to how our digestive system is going to cope. Would you eat a piece of chalk or an iron nail? Unless you're a circus act like Monsieur Mangetout, a.k.a. Michel Lotto, the Frenchman who once ate an entire aeroplane, I think I'm safe in assuming you would not. But why not? After all, we've been told by so-called experts that we need calcium and iron for healthy bones and blood. We also need protein, and meat is high in protein. So they tell us to eat the flesh of animals, and convince us that if we don't, we risk suffering a protein deficiency. Have you ever stopped to wonder where those animals get their protein from? Have you ever seen a cow feeding on the flesh of another animal? Cows are considerably bigger and stronger than us. They eat no meat at all. Neither, for that matter, do elephants, rhinoceroses, giraffes, hippopotamuses, horses, buffalo, gorillas. The list is virtually endless. The largest and strongest animals on land are all herbivores. We need protein to build muscle, so we're told to eat meat. This is the plastic bag syndrome. If we follow that logic, shouldn't we eat teeth and bones too in order to get calcium? Or simpler still, a piece of chalk? Instead, we're advised to eat cheese and drink milk to obtain calcium. How much cheese does an elephant eat? How much milk does it drink? I've never seen any teeth larger than the tusks of an elephant, and all that without a single morsel of cheese. The fact is, an elephant gets all the protein and calcium it needs by eating only vegetation. I can sense the meat eaters among you feeling uneasy at this point. Alan's going to try and turn me into a vegetarian. Remember, with my method, you can eat as much of your favourite foods as you want whenever you want, as often as you want, and be the exact weight you want to be, without dieting, special exercise, using willpower, or feeling deprived. I'm certainly not about to insist you go on a diet of any kind, vegetarian or otherwise. I'm simply explaining the false logic in the advice we're given by so-called experts, such as doctors and nutritionists. The food we eat passes through a highly sophisticated process we call digestion. It begins at the chewing stage, where saliva mixes with the food in the mouth and starts to break it down. Once the food reaches the stomach, the digestive juices come into play, breaking it down further. The stomach adjusts its digestive juices according to what we eat. When it's done its best, the food travels into the intestines, where the nutrients are extracted and distributed around the body, and the remaining waste matter is then disposed of via the colon. This last part of the process can only take place effectively if the food has been properly digested. You can ensure this happens by eating in its natural state the food that nature has provided, and by being active enough to ensure that your metabolism is ticking over efficiently. If you don't, your body will not function properly, and this will lead to weight problems. Until now, you may have tried focusing on counting calories, taking supplements, avoiding carbohydrates, etc. That takes the joy out of eating. Now you can stop worrying about such details. Nature's guide automatically ensures you get everything you need in exactly the right balance. The wrong advice is part of the brainwashing. I will help you to unravel the brainwashing and follow your instincts. There's a close relationship between you and your body. Your body will look after you if you look after your body. It's a partnership. Fail to fulfill your end of the deal, and you can hardly complain if your body gives up on you. Understanding the consequences. It's not necessary to know how your car works in order to keep it running properly, nor is it necessary to know how your digestive system works in order to keep your body running properly, provided you follow nature's guide. However, I want you to understand the basics of digestion so that you can see clearly what happens if you don't follow the guide. I used to be a chain smoker and was well aware of the risk of lung cancer, but it didn't make me quit. I hoped that I would be one of the lucky ones who escaped the disease and thought that if I did, I would get away scot-free. It was like Russian roulette. You either got lung cancer or you didn't. I ignored the huge damage that smoking was doing to my insides, the coagulation of my blood, the blocking of my veins and arteries, and the terrible strain put on my heart as it tried to keep the thickening gunge circulating through my system. For the first 50 years of my life, I took the same attitude to eating as I did to smoking. I buried my head in the sand and told myself that I was just one of those people who preferred to live life to the full and die young rather than live like a monk to a grand old age. Live life to the full. How could I be so blind? I was overweight, lethargic, and short of breath. I suffered from regular bouts of indigestion and constipation. When I gave in to temptation, I felt guilty. When I resisted, I felt deprived. Once I had learned a bit about how digestion works, I was amazed that indigestion, heartburn, and constipation were all I had suffered. It made me aware of the incredible job that our bodies do in withstanding the abuse that we subject them to every day, year after year. We know our body is irreplaceable. So why do we destroy it? We're not stupid. Our intelligence is what sets us above every other animal on the planet. The only explanation has to be that we don't realize what we're doing, because we're shrouded in ignorance and confusion. The car manufacturer's guide makes caring for your car very simple. But when it comes to eating, we're expected to find the instructions in a whole library of guides, all offering conflicting messages based on a mishmash of tradition, ignorance, advertising, and convenience. The outcome is confusion. Nature's guide makes caring for your body very simple. So how do we learn when and what to eat to attain our ideal weight and be fit and healthy without feeling deprived? It was a marvelous moment when I discovered that it's all in nature's guide. I wish I'd found out sooner, but I now know it's never too late. Fortunately for you, you don't have to work it out for yourself. Once you counter the brainwashing, all will come naturally. My method will show you the way. Summary. You only get one body. Look after it. The strongest animals on earth don't get their protein from meat. To get the nutrients we need from food, it must be properly digestible. Don't put plastic bags in your fuel tank. Nature's Guide takes care of all your nutritional needs. Top tip number 8. The right stuff. You won't need extra vitamins or supplements. All your nutritional needs can be taken care of by eating the right foods. They have everything we need to give us the strength and energy to live life to the full. You'll no longer be overweight or lethargic, as your body will be functioning efficiently. Chapter 9. Trust Your Senses. In this chapter, how your sensor decides what's good to eat. The sixth sense. Removing the mental tug of war. Losing our way. Nature's Guide ensures that all wild animals love to eat the foods that keep them fit, healthy, and the ideal weight. Why do humans stray? How do we distinguish between food and poison? And how do we know which are the best foods for us? Parents go out of their way to make sure that poisons are kept away from their children. We print labels on poisons, toxic, keep out of the reach of children, not to be taken internally, etc. We don't have to use our own judgment. We're taught not to consume poisons. How do wild animals know? They can't put labels on things or tell each other what to avoid. And how have they learned what are the best foods for them? All creatures have a sensor designed to tell them what to eat and what not to eat. Using sight, smell, hearing, touch,